Welcome to Learned Lag, a podcast about yesterday's Learned League questions and answers. I'm George.
And I'm Amanda. George and I are both in Zephyr A. This is season 32 for George and season 28 for me.
And this is day 25 of season 100, the day after the post-anti-penultimate day. Question one asks us where the Real Housewives franchise originated.
Right, noting that it's had installments in New York, New Jersey, Beverly Hills. And so, this is not a show that I watch or follow particularly. I probably hear about it when they come out with a new edition in a different city, but, you know, just in passing. The names that came to mind, I think there's one of Atlanta, I think there's one of Orange County, and there are probably others, but I felt like those sounded to me like they were good possibilities. And for no real reason, I just kind of felt like Atlanta might have been the original one, because it felt like it was a place that was a little less, you know, classically Richie Rich kind of setting versus just like, here's a big city that isn't one of the, you know, the gigantic two coastal ones that you would picture rich people in. And for whatever reason, I just thought that sounds like a good early candidate. So I went with Atlanta.
So I don't watch this either. But I do remember that when it first came out, it was kind of drafting in the wake of Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's Real Housewives.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that Desperate Housewives, I don't know, was specifically in any particular city, but it always kind of felt to me like Southern California-ish.
Sure.
And I knew that Real Housewives of Orange County had been one of the early ones.
Ah.
So I figured that's probably the first one. Yeah, that would be where they were coming from. So I'll say Orange County.
And unfortunately for me, that was correct. Hmm. I did just now look up the Atlanta edition, which there was one of, and that was 2008.
Okay.
So that was a pretty early one, at least. I was on in the right area, but not quite there. Question two asks us, what is it now permissible to end a sentence with?
This is a preposition.
Mm-hmm.
This was not something I noted last month when Merriam-Webster did it. They occasionally will do stuff like this just kind of to, get a few clicks on Twitter and the like.
Sure.
And since I'm no longer on Twitter, I don't catch these as much. It probably didn't make it in onto any of my other socials because most of the people I know aren't on Twitter anymore either. this was something that they have long kind of allowed for in most style guides, and most professional language people have said that that's just kind of a silly thing that came up as a gatekeeping thing a while ago and has carried on ever since. But this was when, as soon as I saw that the question ends with a preposition, I figured, oh, this has got to be that.
Yeah. I thought much the same, and it's the kind of thing that always puts one in mind of that probably apocryphal, I think, Winston Churchill anecdote about being admonished about it, being an indignity up with which he would not put. This is just, it is one of those grammar rules that very much was designed to be a way to point out when someone is not acting proper according to the arbiters of grammar. I figured this had to be a preposition because that was the thing that's classically not allowed, but now is much more, I think usage has overtaken any of that that sense of, you know, overweening propriety.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to divert and hijack this whole question, by the way, to make a plea to Merriam-Webster to please make your Blossom Daily word game easier for my iPad to load. I don't know why it is so resource intensive that it, you know, crashes constantly, you know, an error occurs and it has to reload. Like, it's essentially, so this is kind of like a dual plug and complaint. If you don't want to pony up for the New York Times game subscription so that you can play the that Pangram one that they do.
Queen Bee?
If it's Queen Bee, I don't know what it is. It's the word finding thing, mm-hmm. with, you know, the seven letters, and they're in kind of a hexagon shape with one in the middle. Merriam-Webster has their version called Blossom Daily, which is free, but kind of you get what you pay for, because it is cute and pretty and nicely animated, and it just makes my phone go into vapor lock, or my iPad particularly. Probably my phone would do a better job with it. But I can't figure out why. It's not like it's, you know, it's like web 1.0 level animation here that they're, you know, putting in as a cute flourish for it. And anyway, that's my plea. If any of you are connected to Merriam-Webster, please ask them to just figure that one out for me. Thank you. And on to question three.
Question three asks us, what city's ninth and final version was destroyed by earthquakes about 1,500 years ago?
Yeah, I didn't know this one. The name Ephesus came to mind, so I put that down.
Oh.
That was it. Because, like, I didn't, you know, this is not a time in history that I've studied. I haven't read, you know, the epic poems and so on, like, that would have perhaps told me this. So, I just don't know this one.
My first thought was Troy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know that's, you know, an ancient city that has been, you know, rediscovered within the last, I guess, couple hundred years now. And was, you know, long fabled in stories and such like. And I remember that it was numbered using Roman numerals specifically. Like, I remember hearing about, like, Troy VII versus Troy II and things like that. Never actually studied it. I just remember reading about this sort of thing. But then I thought, well, what about Jericho? Jericho also is one of those ancient cities that I feel like was inhabited for much longer than we thought it, you think, when you think of Troy and Jericho, you think, oh, these are, you know, things that passed into antiquity long before anything that I've ever thought of. But like, oh no, sure. The year 500, that's, you know, relatively more recent. So I kind of flipped back and forth between the two, but it was really the Roman numeral thing that came back that brought me back to Troy, was because I just remembered seeing that it was numbered like that as they went through the versions and the layers of excavation. Mm-hmm. So I said Troy.
And that was the correct answer. Mm-hmm. Or Ilium, if you prefer. Yep. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I do actually, I've been trying to shore up my knowledge of this area or this period of history, like ancient history, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
There is a history blog that I have on my RSS reader that talks a lot about, you know, archaeological finds and stuff. And this was probably mentioned, but now that I think about it in retrospect, but I guess I got to reinforce that a little better.
Yep. And I'll just mention before it, I'm sure other people have been yelling at their podcasts for a minute now, but Jericho is still occupied. Jericho still exists. So, mm-hmm. I mean, certainly not in the same form. It's like, and it's been destroyed and it's been re-inhabited and the like over the years. But yeah, I just checked after I answered to see, now that I think about it, it is Jericho. But yeah, Jericho's still a thing.
Oh, so. Neat. Question four asks us, what global juggernaut began with a newspaper ad that asked, are you 18 to 23 with the ability to sing, dance? Are you streetwise, outgoing, ambitious, and dedicated?
So I figured this had to be some kind of stage thing. My first thought, Cirque du Soleil.
Mm.
then I thought, that's not really singing and dancing. That's more acrobatry.
True.
So then I thought, what was that one play kind of, not really even a play, but more just kind of like an exhibition of dancing, particularly kind of merging classical forms of dancing, stage dancing, and more hip hop. Stomp. That was it. That was what I heard. Mm-hmm. Stomp. And I thought, that did that start in the UK? That seems dumb, but I don't know. It might have, but you know, it might have just somebody had an idea and figured, oh, well, I'm going to find dancers in the UK as well. Sure, I'll start it there and see how it goes. And I kind of thought, well, maybe it's Blue Man Group. And I thought, no, that's not dancing. That's really, or singing even. Mm-hmm. It's music, but it's not quite that. So I tried thinking of other things, like maybe it's Rent or like some other more kind of play sort of thing. Then I thought those would be kind of more traditionally devised and cast and created, mm-hmm. as opposed to an ad in a newspaper. I feel like that's not how you get Broadway type people, at least not in 1994. Mm-hmm. So I just kept coming back to Stomp and thinking, okay, yeah, that doesn't quite work, but can't really grab onto anything else that it might be. So I'll say Stomp.
So this one, I'm not sure exactly what prompted it to come to mind, other than somewhere I read about this in passing. My first thought was about the Spice Girls, and or kind of like girl or boy bands in general, because this sounds like the description of someone who wants to join forces with, you know, three or four others of their kind and, you know, put on a show.
Sure.
And so I thought about that, but I was like, that seems like I'm just jumping right to the first thing I'm thinking of. And the phrase global juggernaut in reference to the Spice Girls seemed overstating things.
A little bit.
Like, they were popular, and they were popular internationally, sure. But global juggernaut, they are not anymore. That is for sure. I tried to make myself think of some other options. And I was thinking about, like, those sort of talent shows, like, you know, I don't know if it's called UK Idol or whatever it was, but like the UK version was the original of American Idol. Mm-hmm. You know, Britain's Got Talent. You know, were those shows just kind of ramping up back in the early mid 90s?
Right.
But I thought this ad was a little too specific for those, just because the Idol shows are about singing, period. Mm-hmm. They don't, as far as I know, incorporate much in the way of dancing or other, like there's not choreography, you know, as part of the competition there.
Right.
And similarly, that seemed too specific for something like, you know, Britain's Got Talent or America's Got Talent, because those are all sorts of different talents that you can, you know, audition for. And, you know, clearly this is looking for someone who's going to commit to something long term, as opposed to audition for something and get on TV in a particular season and then kind of be done.
Right.
And so then I went on to think about, like, is this like One Direction, you know, because, you know, there are British boy bands out there too, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, it seems kind of early for one of those. I was trying to think of Take That, like Robbie Williams's old band.
Okay.
And so it might have been around that time, but I think I implicitly thought, no, I don't think Thorsten's going to ask us a question about Take That. And I don't think they had as much international success as the Spice Girls did. And so I just kept coming back to, this sounds like the ad that I would place if I was trying to get the Spice Girls to come audition to be in that band. And probably it's just that I, you know, must have read about this at some point as well, and it stuck in my brain well enough to just kind of trigger that little brain circuit, so I put down Spice Girls.
And that was correct.
How about that?
That was a great pull. That is, that was definitely one I would not have been able to logic my way into.
I kind of, yeah, halfway did. I logic through the rationalization of it.
It works.
But wait till you see my answer to the next one.
Question 5 asks us for a baseball pitcher and a baseball outfielder, gives us some stats, and asks for the name that they share.
Yeah, so this one, I looked at this question and went, oh no, because I don't particularly know detailed baseball stats in any way. Particularly like the 1960s, that's before I was born. I mean, I got into baseball when the Detroit Tigers were doing really well in about 1984-ish, 83, 84, 85 kind of time, because, you know, I was like 9 to 11 years old, and that was what everybody was into because they were getting in the World Series and winning the World Series, and that was awesome. And so we all had fun with that. So I looked at this question a couple of times and thought, do I know any pitchers that I could identify as actually being from 1968? Hard no. No, not one bit. And so then I looked at the second date here and I thought 1988, like that's, you know, if we're talking about the World Series of 88 is like fall of my sophomore year in high school. So I should probably have some memory of a little bit of what was happening in sports back then. That's not far from when I was, you know, an active baseball fan.
Sure.
And so, you know, my parents would watch baseball and stuff, my dad especially. And so I thought, well, who can I think of? And I initially was just thinking of kind of the baseball version of like Lucky Johnson, thinking was like, was that Bo Jackson was popular? But he was a huge home run hitter. I think he was later. And this is someone who was in the World Series apparently for like one game and like one at bat, which is wild. So like, who could I think of that would fit a description like that? And for some reason, Kurt Gibson came to mind, a former Detroit Tiger. I don't think he was on the Tigers at the time because they were not like, they kind of peaked in 84, 85-ish and then didn't do much, you know, through the next several years. And so his name, though, came right to mind. And I thought, that's a common enough name that it could be shared with a 1968 season. I'm pretty sure he was an outfielder. It kind of tracks that he would have hit a home run because he was a big hitter, too. He was like a, you know, kind of a brawny, like, you know, power hitter kind of guy. And so I thought, well, he would have been active then. It's plausible that he would have, I don't know, it jumped into this last game of the World Series or whatever. Or I don't know if this is his only at-bat, I should say. But, you know, it sounds like this was his only play in that game of the World Series. Maybe just came back for the last one or whatever. And so I thought, well, sure, why not Gibson?
Wow. solid. I read through it and thought, ugh, man, I'm probably not going to get this. I don't follow baseball well enough to have those memories, you know, to be that one of those dudes who can sit around the bar and just say names like Wade Boggs. Oh, here's how bad I am at that. I could not think of another name that I could pretend to use that would not just be insane. But I do remember a World Series when I was a teenager where this one dude heroically came up to bat as a substitute designated pinch hitter, not even coming back from injury, still actively injured.
Oh, wow.
But they needed a power hitter,
mm-hmm.
as I recall. And he was, you know, able to suit up and limped onto the field and took a swing and, by God, hit the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And that was Gibson. I believe Bob Gibson.
Oh.
No, Kirk Gibson. That was Kirk Gibson.
Okay.
The other one might have been Bob Gibson.
Okay.
The pitcher. Right. And then I remember, yeah, there was a pitcher who was real good named Gibson too.
Sure.
Back before I was around at all, much less before I was aware of baseball. I'd heard of him historically, but never saw him. Never knew anything about him other than he was a really good pitcher. So I figured, yeah, this has got to be that Kirk Gibson thing. So I'll say Gibson.
That was the correct answer.
Well done.
Hot dang. I had better get my 3 points for that, although question six might be it.
I probably would have 3'd you for that one.
I think you should. I would have 3'd me for that one before I saw the answer and went, what the heck? All right. Question six, I am going to read in its entirety. What is the poetry item unlisted but core in a certain collection that also has Iam and Troche and Spondy and Anapest?
Okay, so this is some kind of poetry term for three-syllable lines meter.
Feet.
Or I feet, think. Yeah. Well, foot is what eventually I went with, because I just couldn't,
okay.
I figured, okay, maybe it has something to do with threes, but then the only thing I could really think of that worked for that was Troche, which is in the question.
Yeah.
So, it's not like iambic trimeter or something like that. So it's not trimeter. I just finally went with foot, knowing it was wrong, but figured, well, it's a poetry term, so. At least I'm not pounding on the keyboard and giving a random collection of letters.
Sure. Yeah, I similarly flailed at this one as best I could, but that wasn't very, very best. I went through the same thought process of thinking, well, I know what iambic pentameter is, so I know it's not like trimeter, because that would be the meter and not the foot. That part of the, like... that part I could kind of remember from English class, basically, that you have kind of the rhythm of it, and then you have the number of those pieces that go in a line. And so I thought, well, it's three syllables in each line, which I hope you all could sort of hear me reading through the podcast wires here. And I just thought, well, it's got to be try something, I feel like. And so I just thought maybe iamb has a version that's triamb, that's, you know, indicating of three syllables. That may sound ridiculous to those of you who are poetry mavens out there, but it really was. Like, I would have gone with Troche or something like that, if it wasn't in the question. And yeah. Just didn't have this one to hand, so I put triamb.
It was dactyl.
Okay.
Which apparently even a professional Latin instructor who, you know, has to instruct people in how to read the basic verse of ancient Latin, classical Latin, did not get. So I don't feel too bad about it. But yeah, just a poetry terminology question I'm never going to get.
Yeah, not so much. Same. That left me with three on the day and kind of a weird three that I...
Yeah.
You know, I am a little disappointed about the Real Housewives thing, but, you know, I haven't paid that much attention to it, so I paid not quite enough to know that much. And so I got to hang my hopes on the... sports question, which anybody in their right mind should three me on completely.
Yep.
And still, like, in fact, I am slightly overperforming in sports questions this season. I think I'm over 500 for once in many, many seasons, which is kind of a nice change of pace. And I do hope that, you know, people find the Spice Girls question just difficult enough that maybe I can get another 2 points out of it, or, you know, something. Yeah. I feel like preposition is going to be the gimme. That's language is high for me, and that's a pretty easy one.
Yeah, but not even knowing that it was a pop music question is probably going to throw off some people. Like, perhaps. I graded it as a theater question.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than a pop music question. It did not even occur to me.
That's a thought, yeah.
So.
Yep, yeah, I mean, exactly. It's kind of that wild card of, like, how do I categorize this if I don't myself, you know, feel reassured about what it is? So, yeah, so I think I'm ending with 107 total correct answers. You said you have a pretty good total there.
109, I think it was.
Nice.
My fifth highest out of 40-something seasons. So, yeah, it was 4 1/3 questions correct per day.
Sure.
Average. So that's okay. That's I'd rather it be I'd rather be over 4.5. That's what I'm aiming for. I've only hit that once, 113 or higher. Because 4 is an average that'll get you probably knocked out of Arundel, and I like staying in Arundel. For no good reason. Like, I know I'm never going to compete for a scarf. That is just, there would have to be a consistent batch of crazy tailored for me questions. Thorsten would just have to give up on art questions and math terms for like an entire season for me to somehow pop. But yeah, I'd like to get it a little higher. And there were a few questions this season that I absolutely should have gotten. And that's who I'm playing against. I'm you know, struggling to keep my head above water in Arundel generally, but really I consider myself to be competing against Thorsten to see how good I am at reading the questions.
Sure.
Because it's not the ones where it's, you know, name this 19th century female artist. That I'm simply not going to get. And I'm not saying it's a bad question. I'm saying it is simply out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
You know, to an extent that I do not think I can get by, you know, doing a survey course or reading a book about art.
Sure.
Which is fine. You know, I don't expect anyone to know about the Gibsons. Just, you know, from their life experience. And anyone who studies to get ready for trivia on a Learned League level, which is very different from a Jeopardy level, is wasting their time. I am not saying you should not learn things for the sake of learning them. I am saying that if you look at your worst category and decide that you're going to actively pursue that to get better at it, you're not wasting your time because it's something you should not morally be doing. It's something that you're not going to get good enough at. Like, you're just not, because, you know, James Holzhauer famously said that he read, like, middle school level trivia type and
yeah, like history books on things.
Because that's the level you get on Jeopardy, because you got to know it now.
Yep.
Learned League, it's a little deeper.
And
so it's just deep enough that you're just not going to get it from anything but kind of a more detailed, you know, thing about that. Like, I read that entire the classical music I forget the guide to it, the DK book. You know, which you saw, it's a huge tome.
It's thick.
It is heavier than a board game. I'm talking about like a big board game.
Hardcover, large pages.
It is a serious amount. It was a serious amount of text that I read over the course of an entire off season.
Right.
And it helped a little in that I remember some of the terminology.
Okay.
But it's not, it has not soaked in enough that I remember things that I didn't know.
Okay.
Like, I don't consider myself to have learned classical music from it.
Sure.
Even though it's helped me a little. You know, I'm willing to say it's given me 2 or 3 questions over the last couple of years.
Sure.
Is that enough to have spent the time on it? No. It's just a it was just a gap in my knowledge that I felt I should correct.
Sure.
Because I just felt I should. Yeah. I should know more about classical music.
Well, and that's, you know, really the best reason to learn things.
Right.
It's because you feel like I want to understand this better and know it better for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
It is a nice bonus if it helps with things like trivia. On the other hand, though, I will say one nice thing about learning things that are out of your wheelhouse is it makes you harder to defend.
Mm.
Especially if you've established, as I sure have, that game sport is my worst category by a margin. Like if there was a way to attack a category that broad, which there isn't, to kind of make it so I get a few more game sport questions per season from here on out, nobody would be expecting me to do so, because, you know, my stats are established and mm-hmm. it's not gonna,
right.
My stats are not going to go up enough to indicate that now I have this different level of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I could see it being somewhat worthwhile for something like that if the category in question is narrow enough, like classical music could be. You know, there's a lot of classical music out there, but the amount that's going to get a question in Learned League about it is right. narrower.
That's the thing. Yeah, because I'm on what, season 32 now?
You're on.
And I'm
yeah,
looking
season
at the 32. Looking at script, and I'm looking at my stats page. In my time, there have been 192 classical music questions.
Uh-huh.
So 32 seasons, 192, that's 6 per season.
Something like that.
If yeah. that. So, you know, the fact that I may have improved my classical music by, I'll be generous and say, you know, 4 questions
mm-hmm.
in the 2 years since I read that book, that, you know, that means that I've gone up by, you know, maybe a third of a question.
Yeah.
You know, per season.
Sure.
So, yeah, and that's I'd say classical music is probably the narrowest category.
Might be.
Like it's the yeah. one that I would say you could, you know, study and absorb and learn about, and sure. you know, so that means you're maybe gaining yourself a couple of questions a season, if that.
Yeah.
Probably closer to 1 cuz the classical music questions, like the sheer fact that I'm at 400 on classical music, uh-huh. 444, a little bit above the league average, I'll just say that. but just the, you know, the fact that I'm at that without ever really being that into classical music tells you that it's not that deep.
Mm-hmm,
like mm-hmm. the questions are not, you know, about the 17th symphony of a guy you've never heard of.
Sure.
It's all stuff that you at least should basically know, or there's a lot of terminology in there. It's like the math mm-hmm. category.
Yeah.
It's a lot of definitions that come up, but
sure. Music theory and whatnot. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, study knowledge for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at your worst category and say, I got to read about that.
Yeah. I've tried to find angles into that for game sport because yeah. it's just so bad.
Yeah.
And well, yet, but it's too broad. It's
yeah.
way too broad. Right.
I mean, the sheer fact that there are two distinct nouns in the category
mm-hmm.
tell you that, yeah, there's, cause it's video games, it's board games, less
oh,
so,
yeah.
but it's sports. It's
card games,
crazy amounts of sports. Yeah. It's not quite a catch all, but it's a lot broader than classical music or even art.
Yeah. And it kind of, you see how the proportion of questions, you know, like on the flip side of things, there are enough questions per season
mm-hmm.
that if you could make a dent in that, that could do you some good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't because it's too big.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the one that I think maybe people could perhaps benefit from in that balance is science is the category with the most questions mm-hmm. perennially.
Yep.
And is, you know, there are some basic things that get asked about that mm-hmm. studying some basic, you know, your middle school or high school level, whatever, text, just refreshing that knowledge that, you know, might already be there, You might benefit from that. On the other hand, if you never got into science and you kind of, you know, you're trying to bring yourself up from, you know, kind of a much lower point at that, it's hard to say how much that'll be worth it, because the Learned League level of questions might get beyond, you know, F equals MA kind of thing. I think, you know, in the end, the reward of playing Learned League is insufficient to justify changing your whole information, you know, consumption. But if you feel like it will, you know, it's of interest to you, or it makes you a more interesting person to know about these things, or a better conversationalist, or just a better citizen of the world, then those are wonderful reasons to acquire knowledge. And that's, you know, that's how you know what to point yourself towards, I guess.
Yep. And I do keep telling myself that I'm going to start studying mixed drinks.
Oh, that's a good idea. Mm.
Because it seems like there's one or two of those just every time, and going through like getting like the top few dozen, you know, at least if not committed to memory, then at least familiarized. That's a you know, not like I could make a Brandy Alexander, but if I could recognize what's in a Brandy Alexander,
sure,
that would work.
Yeah.
So, but
that's a thought
too. I'm not going to put that much effort into it, I hope.
Theater is another one where it might be narrow enough to. Dependent, like, because there's at like least, musical theater.
At least get like the Tonys down. At least go through it enough that you can recognize, like, oh, mid-50s, yeah, that was Guys and Dolls or whatever.
Right, yeah. And
put stuff in the right decade even would be helpful.
But, yeah, or just kind of have all those names at your fingertips. Like, that's often what I do find handiest is, you know, I don't know if that's the kind of thing that you see in people's stats, but in mine, you know, part of my strength as a player is knowing some stuff about pretty much everything, and, you know, having a very, like, knowing about 2/3 of roughly everything is a good place to be in, because the hard to defend part comes in, and you have a shot at getting some, you know, the occasional question in your obscure or your less favored categories. But theater, you know, it's a less common category, but it's one where if you're not super high rated, then I think you can move up stealthily and catch people off guard. But, you know, it's having just those names of various musicals in your head.
Yep.
You know, you might pick the right one.
Yep.
You know, and it's some of that is some interesting history too. It's a different side of history than you always think about. Like, what was I reading today? Something about just the perspective on life that you have as an artist rather than from other perspectives is different. And it's, you know, it's interesting to put yourself in the shoes of people who view the world differently.
Okay.
And that might be, you know, if you're not a theater kid, then that's a very different perspective than what you have. And it's fun to kind of, like, for me, it's like fantasizing about being enough of an extrovert or performer to want to really practice that and be on stage a lot.
Sure.
Maybe someday I still will. Just, you know, it's broadens the mind, as it were. So that's my recommendation.
Fair. Well, we've been discussing this way too long. So that's it for this season. Tune in May for more post-game analysis.
Yep.
And I won't even bother with the blue sky, because we do not do anything with that in the off-season. So.
Yeah.
Join some mini leagues. Do some one days. That'll be fun. And remember,
don't forfeit.
Don't cheat.